Hello there, dear listener. I'm Christian Corley. You're listening to Casterbris. This is a Doctor Who themed podcast. With me is James McLean. How are you doing, James?
I am doing okay.
Good. That's all we can ever ask for, isn't it, really?
That's top tier stuff. I don't think I go past okay. If I get to okay, I'm okay. Good. Well, no, I suppose I'm better than okay, because okay is relative to my okay. To a general okay, my okay is obviously less for okay to be my top. Yeah, that makes sense?
It depends. What's your top?
Okay, that's what I just said.
So it's just grades of okay?
Well, I guess so. I'm just saying, well, I mean, my okay, I probably wouldn't call okay. I'd probably call it something else.
Meh.
If I was American, yeah, or 20 years younger, maybe.
No chance of either of those things ever happening.
So
it is September 2023. It is insane to think that 10 years ago we were doing podcasts getting comparatively excited about the Doctor Who's 50th anniversary, and here we are 10 years later, James, potentially discussing aspects or elements of the 60th anniversary of the show. When we... A couple of months ago, you may recall, we've established a few new rules for this podcast and some new sort of sub-shows, etc. And when you hear the Doctor Who-esque theme tune, then that is a Doctor Who podcast from us. In November, obviously, as far as we know, there are three Doctor Who episodes on in November. That appears to be what's happening. And then possibly a Shooty Gatwa Christmas special as well. So we're going to be here more regularly in November for obvious reasons. This is possibly, potentially, our last chat about, or our only chat about, Doctor Who 60th anniversary before the episode start to air. So, a little interjection into the podcast that you've just started listening to, because since we recorded that, we have got the big Doctor Who 60th anniversary special trailer. It dropped on Saturday evening. I think it was on... was it on TV? I think it was on TV, James?
Yeah, I think so.
I hear it was on TV during some sort of celebrity dance-off or something. My dad mentioned it to me at like 11 p.m. last night. I'm like, Dad, why are you texting me now? Dad, you're 82. You should be asleep. But aside from that, so I checked it out first thing this morning, and we're going to watch it together now, James. So we'll synchronise play buttons, and we'll hit it in 3, 2, 1. Now, notice from this that the opening shots are very sort of cinematic, aren't they?
Naturally.
But they lack a little bit of the sort of... I guess cheekiness of the Moffat years, for obvious reasons, because this is Russell T Davies overseeing Doctor Who. But it already feels different to what we've seen for the last 10 years, or certainly the last 8 years.
It is very cinematic. It is very soft reboot, isn't it?
Yes.
Setting everything up in a freshly forward and reminding you of everything that happened with Donna.
Pretty, it's a strange thing to come back to, really, isn't it, 15 years later? I mean, I think we talked about this previously.
Yeah.
But it's like going back, it's like the Sylvester McCoy era, revisiting something that happened between the Doctor and Leela, in terms of time.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
It's crackers. Or even earlier than that, really, I suppose. The show finished in 1989, so 15 years before 1975. The Doctor and Sarah. Either of the Doctors and Sarah. It's crazy. And yet, here it is with Unit HQ looking rather familiar, even though we've never seen it before.
It's as I think I've said before, it's amazing how this is almost like... a bizarre continuation, as if the last, since 2010, didn't happen. You're just literally following the story, which is as it was left off at the end of time. And there's some very familiar characteristics popping out in his 14th. Feels very much like a... what would you have been now? I can't remember, 10th.
10th and 11th, if we're following the... And there's a Shuey Gatwa at the end there. Looking, I mean, I've got to be honest, the Lenny Henry doctor. But that aside, I mean, we know this has been coming, and we've seen all the clips and the photographs from beyond the internet and what have you. I suppose the most significant thing about this is confirmation that Neil Patrick Harris is the toy maker. Yeah.
Which is a surprise and yet not a surprise. Kind of expected it would be, but it is quite an old character to bring back, I guess, but has been brought back for Big Finish. So why not?
Ah, no. Who was it who played the toymaker for Big Finish? Was it David Bailey?
Yes, it was. It was David Bailey from Robots of Death.
Yeah. Thought it was, yeah.
Yeah. So whether that will ignore that and move on, most likely. But, it seems to be going in a good direction. It seems to be giving people what they want, fans what they want as well. So it seems accessible, and yet it's got those little things like the toy maker, like Meep. For the older fans, you've got the Tenant Donna. For the mid-range fans, who would have remembered this when they were 8 or 9.
Beep the Meep isn't really for the older fans. Beep the Meep is for the Doctor Who Weekly fans.
Well, yes, true. But then I'm just assuming fans of that era, because there was still Doctor Who going on. But, as a kid, there wasn't much else merchandise to go bar from the Doctor Who Weekly. So,
yeah.
It was part and parcel of, a digestible part of their world. So, yeah, I mean, it looks good. I mean, it doesn't give you... I mean, I still think it probably gives too much, sadly, personally. There's too much continuity in it. It feels like, chronology. You feel, I always like trailers which give you no clue where anything's going to come in what order. But I think, this trailer, as I say, is there to kind of, well, as they do for every era, a soft reboot to a new era where you try and put the past behind and you try and push forward. So it's trying to establish what it's going to be doing. So I understand its logic. I just don't find them as satisfying to watch. It's Davis back. It feels like Davis in terms of production, doesn't it? It's that same sort of sense of trying to pull in the old and the new, but keep it moving forward.
Yeah, definitely. And of course, I mean, there wasn't an awful lot of that in the first series back in 2005, was there, apart from the Daleks and the head of a Cyberman. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, he one of the better things that Russell T Davies did during his first term in charge of Doctor Who was to reinvigorate older villains in a way that maybe didn't happen under Stephen Moffat and Chris Chibnall. The Silurians didn't. I mean, I know they've taken on a modern life of their own with the ones in
Paternoster. Yeah,
the Paternoster Silurian. But they're not Silurians in the classic mould. So, mould being the operative word, I think, because a lot of moulding has gone on with those Silurians. It almost feels like a completely different creature.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to draw from the past, because, you're drawing from it, people want the past, but, the past is a different world with a different context, different pacing, different, cultural issues that those characters are bound around. It's incredible, really, when you think how the Cybermen have moved forward and how Davis quite neatly tapped that into the emerging concerns over, mobile technology and being so connected to technology, as in the 60s, it was, organ donation.
So
it is kind of hard to bring them into a new space. And yeah, I agree with you. I never felt the Silurians managed it. I think the Centaurans did. I think there was a danger with the Centaurans that they became a little overly comical.
Yeah.
But I guess that was, in a sense, part of the show's acknowledgement that they were kind of odd designs. But then so are the Daleks.
Well, yeah. There's been very few jokes about the Daleks, really.
Comical moments. Yeah, exactly. But you have a running joke with one Centauran. So, And that does that does devalue them. It does diminish them. I don't think the Centaurians have ever felt like a threat to me, even when they've tried to make them. But then,
what about Flux? Really, they were like a bit of a threat in Flux, weren't they?
They were, but did they feel any more of a threat? I don't know. I just don't. I just don't think they're very easy to make a threat.
Which really they should be, given that they can essentially have an army in a matter of hours.
And that's never done. I mean, maybe that would be the way to do it.
Yeah.
Is that, that fast army somehow might be the way to make them interesting. But ultimately, virtually every enemy of any race has an army. You know, so they're basically soldiers, strong soldiers.
Yeah. Well, if we bring this back to the trailer and to the Celestial Tie Maker or the Tie Maker, I mean, that's an episode, serial I've only seen them once, I think. The Tie Maker was played by Michael Goff, of course, at the time. So how, I mean, obviously we don't know, we can only base it on what we've seen with Neil Patrick Harris in the clips there. We're talking about bringing an old villain back in an updated sense. I mean, and there's various clips in there. There's, you know, he's manning a gun. There's the puppet thing going on, puppeteer thing as well. So, I mean, this some of these are kind of familiar to the original serial, but obviously in a different context. We're not going to know, are we? But until we see the episode. But I find it quite interesting that, and I like the design as well of a toy maker. Sort of a Germanic Prussian toy maker as well.
Yeah, it's a good update, isn't it? I'll be interested to see what they do. I'm sure he'll be even more energetic and flamboyant, and in the same way that obviously John Sim was when he took over the Master. I mean, these are shows which need energy now.
Yeah.
And I think he'll bring it. Yeah, I think it's a good move. I mean, I know we've heard about, you know, there's always been questions about the Tour Maker for many years. You know, is he going to come back? I've only seen threads. Is it going to be the Tour Maker? He's got a weird, considering how little, well, how singular really he'd been in the show. It's amazing what his legacy he had.
Mm. Yeah. So I think it's something to do with the power of the character, isn't it? Again, it's not unique to him, because, you know, there's obviously similar powers with the Master of the Land of Fiction as well.
I think a lot of it is to do with scarcity. And if you think back to this, like the 80s, Celestial Toy Maker, obviously there wasn't much about. And there was like a few sort of shots from the show, and I think probably a couple of promo shots for press.
Mm.
And the costume being quite elaborate and unusual, I think that stuck in people's heads. While for the Mind Robber, there was different iconography there, wasn't there? That exists, and that kept that going, but it wasn't the Master of the Land of Fiction. So I think in a sense the Celestial Toy Maker has carried its potency through to some degree its scarcity. A little bit, I suppose, like with the Web of Fear.
And I suppose as well that Doctor Who fans kind of like it when massively serious actors are involved with the show, don't they, as well? So you've got Michael Goff, an esteemed actor, playing the Toy Maker, the Celestial Toy Maker in 1965, 66, whatever it was. And that's something, again, as along with the visual iconography of his costume, his outfit, the fact that it's Michael Goff as well is kind of a big deal.
I think it is now. I mean, like when I was a kid looking through Peter Haining's books, because as we say, apart from the weekly and then monthly magazine, there wasn't much else there. The Celebration and Akita Time and the Time Traveller's Guide.
Mm.
I remember the shots in there of the Celestial Toy Maker and not really recognised, even though I'd seen Michael Goff, that it was Michael Goff. I mean, I was quite young. But the image, the iconography is what caught me, and it made that cement into my head. And
yeah.
I remember, again, the same sort of image being used on the Nightmare Fair book cover when that came out as a novelisation. So I think, for people older than us, definitely, you know, there was something quite special about that unusual episode. But I think people of our generation, I think a lot of it's to do with the scarcity, which has kept him very much, and the sort of interest in that sort of sense.
Yeah.
Because it's not even like it could even be a... It was never like something that could probably be on DVD either. So I think it always has an air of mystery to it.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Fair enough. So, as I said at the beginning of this little interjection, we've already started the podcast. We're going to go back to it now. How are you feeling about this sort of 10 years thing?
Do you know what? I watched over, I think it, last week or so, I had some leave and I put on some old Doctor Who on iPlayer.
Oh, right.
And Dare the Doctor was actually one of them, not by any reason. I think I started watching, going back to some of Smith's for some reason or another, and it just naturally sequenced onto that episode. So I have watched Dare the Doctor in the last week.
Right. How was it for you?
Okay.
Right.
Is the obvious callback. I must admit, I have enjoyed watching this, because I watched some of Capaldi's as well recently as well, sort of kind of in that era.
Yeah.
And I kind of have enjoyed watching both of them a lot more than I did at the time. Day of the Doctor is actually one where I still don't get any extra enjoyment out of. I don't think it's... I think... And as you've said before, when you watch something the first time, you have expectations, don't you? Almost like, I suppose, going to... If you're one of those types who go to football and you go and see a football game in the stadium, you know, the first time you've got a high anticipation. Imagine if you watch it back again, you see it in a different perspective.
Oh, yeah. If you
do that sort of thing. I don't know. Football people do that.
No, it can
that.
Be very different, very, very different. Going to a game, because I've been to a handful of games, and then watching the same game, maybe not in its entirety, but, you know, it's in its edited form on the Gary Lineker show later in the day.
Oh,
it's...
load of nerds.
It can be... Often it looks like you were at a completely different game to what's presented on screen.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of that is the presentation and the editing and the camera angles and having a completely different experience of being in the stands to... what you actually see. But then again, I mean, there is an expectation that you're going to see the exact same thing that you saw, and of course you're never going to see the exact same thing that you saw.
And that's kind of an established thing, isn't it, that every time we every time we see something we've seen before, we'll gain a new reading out of it.
Yes.
And find something fresh. That is actually a lie, because I think you get to a point, you get some things you rewatch and you come out of it and you go, I got nothing more out of that than I did the last 40 times I've seen it. And Day of the Doctor's kind of like that with me. There's not that much more I get out of it. I suppose, if I'm being a bit flippant on it, obviously you do read little things differently, stuff you didn't quite spot before, or you'd forgotten, and when you rewatch, you go, oh yeah, that was quite clever. But ultimately, it doesn't still give me much. It doesn't really give me much more than it did at the time. While other ones kind of do. Watching Capaldi again, I was like, actually, even the 9th series, which I've always thought was the worst, the ones I've watched again before the Flood, and that the two-parter there, I really enjoyed on a second time. I thought the first time I felt, oh god, this is a bit Base Under Siege. It's trying to shock me, and I'm a bit tired of this, and it's got a lot of the sort of Moffat-y tropes in there as well. But rewatching, I see actually this mystery's pretty good, and you never really get to understand it until near the end, and it holds that well. And Capaldi does a lot of episodes where he doesn't know what's going on, which is kind of cool too. But Dare the Doctor, it's good. It's got some fun stuff going on. The Black Archive scene is good, but. Yeah, I don't know. How about you? What's your memories of it?
I remember enjoying it. I mean, I saw it at the cinema.
Oh, you did, didn't you?
Yeah, that was a bit ostentatious, wasn't it? I don't imagine they'll be doing that again, not with three TV shows. Crikey, I've just knocked my headset off. I generally enjoy Day of the Doctor. I think it's a bit plodding in places, if I'm honest. There's a bit of standing around and talking, a bit too much standing around and talking at times, actually, now I think about it.
I find it a bit glitzy. You know, there's bits in it which feel like, because they're aware that they were going to big screen it, like the whole taking the TARDIS to the Tower of London, you know, by helicopter or to Trafalgar Square. Yeah. It just feels I don't know. I kind of feel like I'm watching someone show off.
Yes.
And it does, because it doesn't really make sense. It's not very funny. And it just feels like a piece. And there's a lot of bits in there where I kind of feel this feels a bit like a piece. But there are some great stuff. I quite like some of the talky bits. I quite like the bits when they're in the cell. I quite like the interplay between John Hurt and Billy Piper. I think that's quite nicely done. And rewatching again, I think John Hurt's character is quite nicely done. It is a really nice story for that character, watching him move through to his final position at the end. And, you know, the curator with Tom Baker is a nice bit at the end as well. That's fun. Yeah, it's okay. It's okay. I don't know. I mean, in some sense, it's a big scale story. And in some ways, it isn't.
Yes.
And in some ways, I like that. And in some ways, I don't. So I like it being quite a character story for the John Hurt Doctor. That's kind of good that it is focused on being, unlike the Five Doctors, for instance, which is just an adventure. It doesn't really propel anyone forward or backwards. It's just an adventure. But there is actually, there is a character thing going on there. But the whole Time War stuff just feels underplayed and feels a bit dull and sort of secondary.
The thing about the Time War in Day of the Doctor is that it feels very two-dimensional.
Yes.
Not even four. You know, it should be, at the very least, it should be three-dimensional.
Yeah.
It's a Time War, so it should at least, it should be 12-dimensional, something like that, really, shouldn't it? It should be all sorts of madness taking place. But really, all you've got is Daleks on Gallifrey, which just feels like, any invasion that we can do, us humans can do with tanks.
And you have that ridiculous bit with John Hurt slowly firing no more into the wall with a laser gun while everyone's being shot around in the distance. And it feels, again, like showpiecey rather than actually making sense. It's good. I mean, I kind of like the fact the Zygons are just the big bad and they're not actually doing anything which is really that bad. And yet at the same time, it's kind of a bit blur, because again it doesn't feel like there's much going on. It feels overcomplicated for what it's doing. Zygons hiding in paintings to come out in the future because they were stuck in the past. It's a bit but it is interesting watching these and sort of going, well, actually I don't mind these as much this time round. And have I done them a disservice, some of these stories which I didn't like? Have I done them a disservice? And I don't know.
Well, you can only interpret something as you see it at the time, can't you? With everything that's,
I think I find with Moffat's stuff, I rewatching, and I always knew this at the time, and I think we always said it at the time. There is such an imagination there, and sometimes in some of just the smallest things, the lines of dialogue. Every line of dialogue has clearly been thought about quite. Or if it's not been thought about, demonstrates a very quick wit.
Yes.
At writing people, everything, and not just in sort of less the comical sparring and the quips, but the actual ideas and the concepts, and even the stuff which is kind of hard to dig into, he'll find new ways of doing it. Even the sort of small things like entering the TARDIS, it's smaller on the outside, and trying to find ways of reattacking old ideas in the show and rejuvenating them is sometimes quite interesting. And then there are times where it doesn't work. I watched its name suddenly escapes me, the final one of Peter Capaldi. The name's gone with David Bradley anyway. And obviously the David Bradley lines as the 1960s William Hartnell are still crushingly awful. And
yes.
They're just bad. But take away those character bits aside, the actual story stuff he writes is really good. And he does a great Sontaran as well. I'm just, again, watching Deep Breath, and there's some great great moments in there, great comedy moments.
Is it World Enough and Time? Is that...
No, it's not, is it? I'm imagining someone listening to this going, oh, for God's sake, you pair of English idiots. No, well, I'm happy for them to know that I can't remember half. Twice upon a time, yeah.
Yeah. Do you know what? I'm very guilty of only having seen that once all the way through. Although I did see a little bit more of it a few weeks ago during the school holidays. And,
but is that sometimes a good thing? Because it does mean that you can go back to them later. Like as I say, this is kind of what I've been doing. So a lot of these I watched on broadcast, never watched again.
Yeah.
So to watch them now, with a few years passed, and able to come with it at a fresh take.
Yeah,
is interesting.
I think Gatiss has been annoyingly comical. I don't know. It's the whole setup just doesn't.
No, I got nothing more out of that story than watching it. There was nothing. I could find nothing more that really interested me. So,
here's an interesting thing. My youngest is now six, and she started watching Doctor Who on iPlayer.
Okay.
I was a little bit worried at first, and then I thought back and thought, well, the other two were watching it possibly younger. So I haven't been too concerned. She's watched through the first series with Christopher Eccleston, then most of series two. She hasn't been she's been absolutely fine. All through gas masks, all through teachers turning into bats, people losing their faces thanks to Maureen Lipman, absolutely screwed her up.
Yeah. It's amazing, isn't it? You can never quite tell at that age what's going to be the trigger.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was fun. And then they're also watching their show on, I don't know what it's called. It's on Netflix. It's like an anthology series with a strange masked creature linking everything up.
Okay.
That's for kids. And by coincidence, that had a similar storyline with mobile phones, selfies, and auctions for people's faces. And she watched that almost like 2 days afterwards. And it was a similar sort of impact. But it's strange how these things come back around again. I suppose Game of Thrones played with the old face thing as well, doesn't it? Losing a face is kind of creepy.
Yeah. I know my sister had great issues with sort of morphing, or so things like Pinocchio's nose growing, or people's stuff where people's bodies change and they can control it, which can often be a part of cartoons and young kids stuff. She found that quite traumatic for a long time. It's always hard to tell what's going to... And it's weird when you get older and you find people who had the same sort of fears. Like, I remember as a kid, I used to be absolutely terrified, and we've said this before, I'm sure, the end credits to Star Trek, where you'd have Balok from the Corbinite Maneuver, the bluish creature monster that would appear for a second on the as an insert in the end credits. It used to terrify me. And you know, and you find out, you know, 20, 30 years later, that there's a whole host of people who had the same freak out, which you thought you were the only one at the time. But no, there were three others.
Three?
Probably.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm going to bash you over a link to the Doctor Who Companion, and my seemingly eternal working colleague Philip Bates has shared some photos of the that have just been released of the 60th anniversary specials that were revealed on Entertainment Weekly, and they've been shared on Twitter by Chatterbox Films. A picture of Tennant looking out of his police box. You have the guest star, whose name escapes me at the moment because I had a bit of a rough sleep last night. Dougie Hauser, that fella. And then what appears to be some cuddly toys and a beep. The meep.
Oh, yes, me and a beep. Yes, I've seen these. Yes, I saw them on some social media or another. Yeah.
It looks like it's going to be fun. And I think a lot of, you know, we've obviously been critical of the last series of Doctor Who, and certainly the series before that perhaps lacked a bit of the fun that certainly the last series in its potential universe destroying flux could have. I suppose they had to keep it fun given the potential impact of that. This looks like it's fun, and I think one of the problems, if you can call it a problem, one of the challenges for Doctor Who perhaps is that for it to be widely appreciated. Surely it does need to be fun, and that maybe that appreciation has gone since Matt Smith moved on. Maybe the perception of Doctor Who in a more public arena is that, you know, it's not as fun or entertaining with Peter Capaldi and Jodie Whittaker as it was with David Tennant and Matt Smith. Would that be fair?
That's an interesting question. Because I am cautious, because I know that our perceptions are often made a little murky because the arena has changed so much.
Yeah.
You know, as you've said on countless podcasts, you know, you look at the David Tennant era, it was Doctor Who and there was not much else in the genre apart from what you might see on Sky. And now there's so many things for our brains to compare it to. It's hard to sort of say where it is and where it isn't. But having also on those watches, watched a couple of older Tennant ones. I think I watched for some reason Daleks Take Manhattan.
Okay.
And it did feel like it had that more fun energy.
Yeah.
It also felt in some ways a little childish. Mm-hmm. I found rewatching them, the Tennant ones, also watched The Doctor's Daughter the other day. I think that was just because there was a Georgina Moffat on social media said something. I thought, oh, I actually just wouldn't mind seeing one of the episode that she was in. And again, I mean, it was good, and there's lots of sci-fi concepts in there, but it did seem, now I say childish, but does childish, is that just another word for fun? Does it just seem like it was lighter and more fun? And maybe that's true. Maybe, you know, in its heyday, that's what people remember. And, you know, when you've got actors from this new show coming back and saying they grew up on the Tennant Smith era because of their age, that's what, you know, maybe a lot of young people remember is the fun. I think they probably were. And I think, yes, it will probably have a little more of that again. I think you're right. I think Chibnall took it, or his idea was to try and take it back to sort of a 60s, 70s feel. Whether it did that or not, people may agree or disagree, but I think that was where he was going with it. And I think, yeah, with Moffat, it became his own thing, which became heavily lore-focused. Moffat lore focused, Doctor Who lore focused, and quite, it became deeper. Some would say richer, maybe. And I wouldn't say that's an unfair thing to say. Maybe it had a richer texture because there was a lot of things going on. But was that more fun? Possibly not.
Yeah, it's difficult to say. I mean, it'd be easy to compare post-November, I suppose. I'm expecting fun, though, because, you know, it's the 60th anniversary. It's celebratory, and it's a kind of, you know, there's a bit of a, it's a reunion almost, isn't it? It's an actual reunion of a doctor and a companion.
It's a continuation. As I've said before, I find it quite funny the way it is, almost as if, and I know he's not doing that deliberately, as if Davis has just extracted the last 15 years of the show, which, is it 15? 2008? 2009?
Well, 2010 to 2013.
Yeah, 2010, okay. 2010. So 13 years of the show and continued on, because this almost feels like it continued on exactly.
Throwing them in the time lash.
Yeah. Yeah, and they've gone back and we're carrying on that story of what happened to Donna after the very last episode, End of Time.
Yeah.
So it's really weird that is where it is. Wilf's back. The whole question of what was going on is back. The same doctor is now back. It's just taken all that gone, and we've got. Well, what do you think of? I know we haven't really talked about this, but okay. What do you think of the screwdriver? Because there's obviously that came out about a month or so ago, 6 weeks ago, the shots of the new screwdriver, and I was quite curious, and it's sort of slightly anal way, I guess, when people were saying, oh, it's very, very David Tennant, and to me it looked extremely Matt Smith.
Well, it's like 50-50, isn't it?
There's a little bit of coral texture to it.
Yeah.
But other than that, the shape and its size is very much like Matt Smith, which surprised me. I didn't know they were going to go there. And I'm assuming that's going to carry through to Shooting Gatwa, given they've been making toys of it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And models of it.
I mean, I don't mind it. I kind of like it. To an extent, I like it. It, it, It resembles the TARDIS a little bit, which I like.
I'm largely indifferent to most of the screwdrivers, to be honest. I'm not that bothered about them particularly. But yeah, I mean, it's quite an interesting, quite a stylized design. I just was just curious to see what you thought about it, just because I don't think we had mentioned it. And it's pretty much the only sort of official thing we've really had, isn't it? They've kept everything quite locked down aside from the images that they wanted people to see, the three that you've... it's been quite a closed session.
Yes, it's... It takes three cell batteries, button cell batteries. Now, I'm going to be honest, I'm pretty sure the last one did, so I'm not expecting... The original... David Tennant / Christopher Eccleston had the same number of batteries, maybe four. So I'm not expecting this toy to do anything particularly much other than make a noise and light up a bit. And it does say Sonic with light and sound effects. So I don't know, maybe they... I know it's a cheap toy. You know, it's £15, £14.99. Maybe they could get them to do something a bit more for £14.99, maybe Bluetooth. You know, I've just bought my children. Oh God, this is my eldest children are now 12, so they and they have, you know, they do a lot of dancing, which means they're at dance classes later than they would have been, you know, a few years ago. So I've had to buy them phones. Now I'm not stupid. I bought them Nokias. So they've both got like the modern equivalent of a 3310, but they have Bluetooth in them, and they cost £20. So I don't think it's beyond character options to include Bluetooth in these devices, and you know, maybe you know, develop an app that you can reactive to the Bluetooth in one of these devices, or even just use it as a remote control, whatever. I don't know. I just feel it just feels like a cheap and easy option just to bung some lights and sound in it.
Yeah, I can get that. There's nothing worse than having a prop that just has no value at all, apart from, I suppose, obviously, if it's for kids, that's different, but.
I mean, it's been 15, 16 years. It hasn't, has it? Since 2000. It's 18 years since the last one of these was released. Come on.
Good Lord.
Do something different. Russell T. Davies has been chatting recently, answering possibly the big question, why did he come back? And he's replied, the real answer is that I still love it. You do spend your years away from Doctor Who, always watching it, always thinking of ideas, thinking about how I would expand it, thinking of stories. It never goes away. I've been inventing stories in my head ever since I was about six. So when I left the show, that doesn't stop. And then he also expands on the returning David Tennant and Catherine Tate. I realised there was a third act to be written for them, and it was so much fun writing it on a really simple level. It's working with two of the best actors in the world, and I'm really interested to push the Doctor and Donna into things they've never done before. So, and the three anniversary episodes, in case we've forgotten, are the Star Beast, Wild Blue Yonder, which is the one I'd forgotten, and The Giggle. Now, we don't have any actual dates, but presumably a quick check of a calendar will reveal that in November, the big day, the 23rd, is on a Thursday. Now, my thinking is that Thursday, Friday, Saturday are going to be Doctor Who nights. But, I mean, I might be wrong. It could be Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
I think that's what they need to do now. I think, obviously, with television having changed massively and broadcast numbers still dropping, but still substantially higher than streamers, I think Netflix remains still the top streamer, but it's still nowhere near BBC One or the terrestrials. But they need to be thinking about how do you make terrestrial TV more event TV. And I think event TV means, having to think. I mean, again, it's like the Barbie and Oppenheimer double bill. You know, there's ways of trying to create buzz and interest in something that happens at a point. And I think that's where BBC needs to be thinking about, you know, rather than like we've said before, and again as said with John Muir recently, is this whole idea of people, I think, don't want to be strung along as much. They want to sort of either have something that's an event or something which is regular and not stressful. So one a week is not too stressful, or knowing that you're going to spend three nights watching something because that's exciting to have something, you know, in one, not quite in one go, but something where you've got three times you can come and sit down with people and watch in a short period.
Yeah,
that is different to the streaming model still, and I think that would be a sensible approach for this.
Yeah, I agree. And also, I mean, if the Christmas thing is happening, because they still haven't confirmed that that's like this that the special episode that they've been filming is for this Christmas might be for the following Christmas. Obviously, Shooty Gatta was quite a popular actor, and he could have some other projects on the go, necessitating that. So don't rule it out. I think that with those three episodes, we're talking about the guy who persuaded the BBC to run five episodes of Torchwood Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday back in, when was that, 2008?
Yeah.
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 It seems such a long time ago to be doing something that could have changed everything, and really... Oh, I mean, what did it do? I mean, I guess it kind of predicted binge watching in a way, I suppose. But it's a shame not more shows have done that. It has been repeated, but not in any sort of not in the same way, sadly. But this is an opportunity to do it again, do that sort of thing again, get people to talk. The only thing about that, of course, is one of the benefits of that Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday thing is that people will be talking about it at work the next morning, which they won't be doing on a Friday, Saturday and Sunday, will they?
No. Well, yeah. I mean, it depends how people communicate. Do people just communicate around the water cooler, or is it around, you know, the WhatsApp cooler? I don't know. But, you know,
but I don't think we should rule out analogue. I think people do still do the kettle and the water cooler. And
oh, yeah, no, I do. I think they do as well. But I'm just saying that... do the way that we all communicate, do we have water cooler moments which are sort of digital these days? Is there like WhatsApp groups which will work over the weekend? Do people come together and do streaming parties? Stuff like that.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. I
find WhatsApp is very much a tool for organising things rather than anything else, to be honest. I don't know if that's just me. So are we going to be there or there? Are we going to be doing this podcast here or then? You know, I don't really spend a lot of time in WhatsApp personally discussing things other than with an editorial team I'm part of. That's the only time I use it. I don't really have a social WhatsApp that is about just being social. It's always a social WhatsApp about going to places and being social. You know what I mean?
Well, that's because you're middle-aged.
Okay.
Now, I'm not saying that young people do either. I'm just saying that, you know, I'm just very aware that the different people use different approaches to how they socialise. And obviously politicians use WhatsApp for much socialising on a political front. Maybe other people do as well. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I get your point, though. Over the weekend, do you lose that water cooler thing, or is it more focused on trying to be a family thing? I don't know, that could be a rationale to be thinking about these days. I mean, one of the strengths of the Barbie film was this idea that you would pull on the strings of the millennials and potentially Gen X who will have grown up heavily with the Barbie dolls and get them into the cinema with their six-year-old kids who would then want to buy a Barbie. So, you know, event TV doesn't necessarily have to be about the office. It could be about family spaces as well. 3 days of families watching the same show, indoctrinating your child into Doctor Who. You know, is there a logic there as well?
Possibly. Okay, let's move along a little bit. Now, the reason I have made that noise there, pardon me. Oh, sorry. Or was it? No. Hello, Gerald. No, the reason I wanted to move along was because there was a rather lovely thing shared with us a few days ago, or shared on the internet a few days ago, by The Confession Dial on Twitter, which was this regeneration of the second Doctor to the third Doctor. It's not the first time this has been attempted, but I think it's possibly the best one yet. So it commences with scenes from the end of the War Games. Then it uses various cleverly reused footage of Patrick Troughton and John Pertwee to create a regeneration in the modern style, and then lands the Third Doctor in the first few minutes or the first episode of Spearhead from Space. And I mean, we talked about this briefly on WhatsApp, didn't we? And
yes, our social group. And yeah.
in which we organise podcasts. And I mean, I really like it. I've watched it a couple of times now. Because it's not easy to do this stuff, is it? You know, you're using things. I mean, for Troughton, there isn't much of Troughton playing the Doctor in colour, so that's difficult. You've got a colourisation aspect to things. Then you've got like taking bits of John Pertwee asleep, putting him in a chair. You've got the whole TARDIS. It's superbly done.
Yeah, and it's, you can normally see quite a lot of the cracks, which are harder to see in this video. You can normally see where the head is placed on, or you can see often the reverse shots used to match where they want the character to be. But it is pretty good. It still bugs me a little, and I was thinking it's rewatching some of the stuff, and I know, again, we've talked about this before, but I am 100% sure that that new series regeneration is simply was meant to just be the time energy leaving the Doctor from having taken it out of Rose and it exploding everywhere. Yeah. And that was the idea. And then that became adopted into the idea of what a regeneration was like. So it's really weird that it's now become a staple thing. And I think it's a kind of a shame, because I think one of the fun things about regenerations was that each one and each production was slightly different. So you got to see different ways. I mean, obviously they'd be not totally dissimilar because there's limited technologies, but there were some different attempts, wasn't there? I mean, the Davison to Baker one was quite a powerful one, quite really well done. Legopolis was quite interesting in itself, although in itself not horrendously different to what they did with Pertwee. Obviously McCoy to Paul McGann's was quite unusual. Lots of Gurning, definitely. And you just, why? It'd be nice to see some different approaches to it. And obviously, we got a very quick one with Smith to Capaldi. But yeah, I mean, I'm going off base. I think it's really good. I mean, the TARDIS is the wrong TARDIS design for that period, you know, in the console room. You get to see it quite clearly in the War Games, and it's been stripped back quite significantly. So obviously, I've got to dock it points for that. I'm not quite sure whether I approve of him materialising the TARDIS in Spearhead from Space without using the small model shot.
Yes, I know the one you mean.
We all know it.
That small model shot that everyone looks at, everyone sort of covers over their eyes for a moment before the...
Because it doesn't look anything like the box you see when it's... Yeah, I get that. And I know why I did it, and that's great. I know, it is brilliant. And I love the little... inside joke to the 70s and 80s.
Yes.
Almost like there could have been a story underneath there for the whole era of why he stays on Earth in that point, because of this whole, is it the 70s or is it the 80s?
And then he gets shot in the head and forgets about it.
Yes. it's a lovely bit of fan work, isn't it? It's just a really nice bit of work. Yeah, I know people go, why can't the show do this? And you don't know how long this person's taken to do it and how much time effects companies have to do the stuff and shows have to do the stuff. But it's nice when you get the opportunity to see this sort of nuanced stuff done so well by people who've got the time and the enthusiasm to do it.
Yes.
It was really good. I mean, especially as you say, I think what stood out was the use of the likenesses of Pertwee and Troughton, and how well they were implemented, and Compton was really good.
Yeah, so I'll include a link to that in the show notes so you can check out for yourself. But I'd be very surprised if you aren't impressed by that. I think the creators have done a very good job of that. And I mean, as James alludes to that, I think it must have taken a lot of work over a lot of time to get it to that standard. It looks absolutely stunning.
But it's nice, isn't it? Because especially when you're dealing with historical things where you the concept doesn't have the opportunity to go back and flesh out areas which perhaps could have been fleshed out or would have been fleshed out if the show was done now. And obviously we have, as you say, Twice Upon a Time Lord, which sort of does that a bit. But that whole sequence between Troughton and Pertwee is a lost moment, isn't it? You never know how that really worked. You only got what you see on the screen. I'm sure some of the books have probably covered it, but it's nice to see fans sort of be able to sort of really imagine what that was like, that space between those two episodes. I wish the show just doesn't have time to do, or the interest in doing. Why should it?
Well, indeed.
In fact, you know, Twice Upon a Time, I still think was the wrong side of indulgent. At the same time, you know, they've got David Bradley. They've got the props. I can see why they go, oh, why not? Especially from Offutt, sort of like, well, you know, if I've got to do this Christmas episode, let me just indulge myself. Let me have a little bit of fun before I walk. So I can kind of see that.
Yeah. I mean, I have a little bit of an issue with people indulging themselves, but, you know, I suppose we all do it to some extent in our work, if we can, in order to keep things from becoming boring or staid or tired or whatever. I just, maybe I feel if my job is to entertain people, maybe I feel that maybe that's, I mean, it's not my job to entertain people, but although perhaps it is here, and perhaps I'm being self-indulgent by having this opinion live on the podcast.
I don't know. I mean, ultimately, I think it depends on whether it works or not, doesn't it? I mean,
well, yes.
That's the bottom line, is if it had been a... I mean, you could sort of say, is Day of the Doctor an indulgement? I don't know. I think it actually does something meaningful. I think the problem for me with Twice Upon a Time Lord is, in part, I kind of feel like he, like Moffat, like Davis was, is tired by this point. Quite likely, perhaps, not wanting to have had to have done the Xmas special as well. And... you know, one might be able to feel that. But I think ultimately, I never really felt I understood this whole... I understood it, but the whole Capaldi not wanting to regenerate, it sounds like a good idea, but it doesn't feel like... I know the story tries to show that he has a reason to move on, but it never feels like it really gets that across.
Mm.
Up until the very... all the way through, even to his final goodbyes to Clara and Bill... he's still saying, oh, I don't think I'm going to carry on, I'm done. And then he's in the TARDIS, he's kind of like, oh, well, one more, what will it hurt? And it doesn't feel like it has any, as if the whole story has had any real massive impact on him. So it doesn't really feel like it gives you anything. It's an odd story like that. While Day of the Doctor, you do have a quite clear trajectory, a quite meaningful emotional journey for John Hurt's character. And I just don't think he manages it with Capaldi. I just feel... it's a shame for Capaldi, having rewatched the stuff, when I've really grown to like the three aspects of his character you see over those three seasons. And those last two episodes just feel a bit drawn out on that front.
Yeah. I wonder, maybe, you know, the idea of the Doctor maybe getting a bit tired isn't entirely new, is it? Because we had Tom Baker suggesting the Doctor trying to go on holiday many years ago. You've got Stephen Moffat himself with The Curse of Fatal Death. With the Doctor retiring.
Matt Smith, who spends a couple of, you know, 100 years, or however long he spends in Victorian London after he loses Amy.
Yeah.
And then as a monk, you know, and Capaldi himself. I don't know, yeah. I know what you mean. Doesn't feel like it gives you anything fresh. And to be honest, and I don't know, I'd love to know what Capaldi himself thought of this. I always felt that Doctor would have been a better Doctor to have gone out aggressively. And I don't mean, obviously, angrily, but... in a sort of act or a sacrifice which was far more sort of edgy, far more sort of powerful, rather than the slow whimper that sort of approach gives.
Yeah.
I thought that maybe again, you know, fighting the Cybermen in that the last two parts of that would have been a good space to have actually given him quite a heroic... defiant, I think is the word I'm looking for, not angry, a defiant, because he's a defiant character. That would have been, and I think you could have done something quite exciting and special there, instead of a few shots from a Cyberman and then a slow almost tenant-like tantrum as to not moving on and not wanting to carry on. It just didn't work.
Yes. Yeah, it's unfortunate that it doesn't remain particularly memorable, unfortunately.
It's funny that, isn't it? Because I'm just thinking about it. It blows my mind that Doctor Who is absolutely terrible at doing good regenerations, by and large. I mean, I'm just trying to think back. I mean, obviously, Legopolis was a very powerful, and Caves of Androzani. Parting of the Ways, to a degree, I think, has a good one. And End of Time, a lot of people say, is indulgent, is a little along the Capaldi vein. But I think it's actually got quite a lot of emotion to it. I think that one works. But that whole act of trying to find a way, and I don't mean about the regeneration itself, I'm talking about the act which brings to the point of the regeneration, the moment, the sort of the dramatic moment of sacrifice. You know, with even Jodie Whittaker, you know, the Master gets one last shot off, which hits her. Now you have a nice little moment with her and Yaz afterwards. So I'm not saying it's a bad and a nice moment on the cliff edge, but the actual act of the moment where it happens seems to be something which you'd think would be quite easy to do. You think it would be quite easy to sort of create. I mean, you know, with something like with Capaldi, I'm thinking, like, if you're going to have him shot by Cybermen, then it'd be better him sort of trying to actually save someone and either being constantly shot by a Cyberman as he moves further and further, you know, trying to protect someone or trying to reach someone. And you just see the absolute sort of defiance that he's going to get to the point of whatever that catalyst of the drama is while he is being something like that rather than just random shot. And the same with Jodie Whittaker, you know, just a random shot. It just feels such an afterthought. Why couldn't that be part of that moment? Or as I think people said at the time, and we might have said as well, why couldn't it have been that having done the regeneration or the degeneration, that itself could be something which is the catalyst towards a regeneration because your body's been screwed around with. It's odd that Doctor doesn't do it very well, and you can understand it maybe more the BBC classic era where the style of adventure dramatic writing and the budget for it perhaps wasn't quite as slick. But, I mean, Legopolis did a great job. I mean, I think Caves of Androzani. I mean, one thing I've got to say about Nathan Turner, he did good outros to his Doctors.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Caves of Androzani is the one that stands out for me the most.
Yeah, but that's the sort of thing you want. You want to see the hero. The Doctor is a hero. You want to see if you're going to have the hero die, is if you're going to have any hero die, which is literally what you're doing, you want that to have some sense of
meaning.
Gravitas to it, meaning. Give them gravitas. A meaning, give them a final shout. And sometimes you can't. I mean, obviously, McCoy's getting shot outside the TARDIS, you could say is almost like a resistance to that, to show that sometimes the hero just is unlucky. But I don't even think that was intended. I don't think it was that meta or, you know, reflective of the show.
It's just to have him but get rid of him as quickly as possible, isn't it?
Exactly, really? Exactly. And that's a shame.
Yeah.
You need to have those sort of moments. And again, Eccleston's is very well done like that as well. Davis got it, to be fair. He got it. And End of Time is all about that. The lovely, as we've talked about many times, the Wilf moment with the Doctor and his defiance and not wanting to actually sacrifice himself for Wilf is a beautiful moment. And that's all been fed into this whole thing that you have the Doctor aware that his own sacrifice is coming up. So it can do it, but it hasn't done it a lot. Not something that I think Moffat's really managed to do well. Even Smith's, I think, was a bit weird.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, we're going to wrap up this week's Doctor Who chat, or this month's Doctor Who chat, and I don't imagine we'll be back on this topic before November, but once that comes around, we will be looking at all three episodes of Doctor Who's 60th anniversary, which sounds kind of grand, doesn't it? Three episodes of Doctor Who's 60th anniversary, but I mean, I guess we kind of had three episodes last time as well. We had the Day of the Doctor, and we had the Night of the Doctor, and the Time of the Doctor before that could all be considered linked stories. So, anyway, maybe I'm pushing.
But it's still the way it's being done is being quite clever.
Oh, yeah.
He's having Tennant back, his interesting acknowledgement of its history, which Tennant now is, as horrid as it is to think, is old history.
Yeah.
And you've got a fresh new Doctor with a fresh new vision coming straight after it. And you've got, you know, to have the producer and the production crew come back again is clearly to bring a different... I think that has a lot to engage. I hope that they do get good figures, they get good engagement for it, because there's a lot of reasons to be interested in what this is going to be like. Does it compare to his old stuff? How different does it feel?
Definitely. We're going to have a lot to talk about.
People just don't focus too much on audience figures, because that's not these days how you can judge the quality of a show. There's too many things out there. You can't keep checking audience figures as if it's 2008. It doesn't work like that anymore.
Yes. Unless, of course, suddenly, due to Russell T Davies, it does. But that's another conversation as well. We will be back next time. Until then, it is goodbye from us.